And so many people came out. It was the largest one we've ever done. I know we say that a lot lately, but it was the truth. One thing, like, we discuss this and we plan it, and our staff meetings, we talk about it, and we go over it, and we continue to talk about it. One thing we never talked about, because it's never been an issue, was parking. And this year we ran out of parking. And so that tells you a little bit about how big it was. I mean, it was amazing. We had, Brett had some of his parking team from the fireworks show. They jumped into action that night. And so it was awesome. And we had so much fun. Kids walked away with a ton of candy, with sodas. I mean, it was just a blast. And one thing that is amazing, and I love this event so much, is we've made connections with people in our community. And we see them 3 times a year. We'll see him at the Easter egg hunt. We'll see him at the Fireworks of Brighton show. And then we see him at Sugar Rush. But we've seen them so much that now we know them. They'll come up to me and they'll start joking. They'll start laughing. We tease each other. It's awesome. That's the only time we see them. But you know what? They know there's a group of people here that love them, that value their kids. And they can go to any time when they need help. And isn't that what it's about? We just love on people in a practical way and show them Jesus. And that's what we're going to do this past Wednesday night. So much fun. Thank you for helping. Thank you those who served. I mean, we had a blast, and it was a great night. So thank you for, one, allowing us to do it. Two, bringing all the candy you brought. Three, serving. Four, inviting people. Just thank you. We had a blast, and that's our heart. And thank you for letting us be Jesus to a lot of people Wednesday night. And so we sure appreciate that. I'm going to jump right in after one more thing. I'm sorry. I got a lot to say. I had an energy drink, plus I had my shots. I don't know how many shots. They won't tell me anymore. But so I got a lot to say. This coming Tuesday, okay, we can't press strongly enough. You need to get out and exercise your vote. I'm not telling you which way to vote. I'm just saying go use your vote. And I don't want to just show up and there's a line out the door around the corner. Like, oh, I'm just come back. No. Stay, wait in line, vote. There's so many important things. It's not just the president and vice president we're voting on. Okay, that's huge right there in and of itself. But there's this whole list of amendments that are extremely important for you to vote on, okay? You need to exercise your vote, okay? There's 2 gambling amendments. Like, well, that's no big deal. Well, it is, because you crack the door open to something that could be a larger issue. And the first one they package is like, oh, the schools are going to get so much money. It's baloney. Okay, and there's been, they did this in another state, and they found out that the state got like around $1,000. Okay, now I don't know how many schools are in Missouri, but divide that by 1,000, you might get a carton of chocolate milk at that time. You know, it's like, what? It's not worth it. Plus, all your money is going out of state, and so I won't jump on that one. The one I will jump on is Amendment 3. I'm telling you, I don't normally tell you, you know, which way to, this one I'm telling you, okay? If you value the sanctity of life, there's only one way to vote on Amendment 3, and that's no. And the wording in it is so, it's just wrong, the wording in it, because they're wording it to open doors to other things down the road, and we do not want that. And so, again, do research for yourself. Know what you're voting on when you go into the polls. The biggest thing is get out there, use your voice, and let it be heard before we can't use our voice. Amen? All right, so now we're jumping into Hebrews. We've been in a series about Hebrews, how Jesus is greater. Then we come along to Hebrews chapter 11. We've been here, this is our second time in Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to be there again. I'm just giving you a heads up. But what's awesome about Hebrews chapter 11 is what we see is broken people. Aren't you? I mean, I'm not happy, but it's nice to see the Bible's written about broken people. Because, come on, I'm a broken person. You're a broken person. And we see the Bible written by these broken people, but then we come to Hebrews chapter 11, and it's like the great hall of faith. And the great hall of faith is made up of broken people. Isn't that awesome? We got a shot. You know, that's what I say. I got a chance, right? And so we see this, and today we're coming to the story of a broken man by a neighbor, Abraham. He's regarded probably the most universal father of faith that we have. There's actually three major world religions that claim Abraham as a father of faith. It's Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So, you know, some of you know that you might have grew up in church. You know, Father Abraham had many sons. Many sons had Father Abraham. I am one of them. You know the story, right? We learned the story of Father Abraham. So we're going to look at Abraham's life and his life of faith and how without faith it's impossible to please God. And we talked about this last time we were in Hebrews chapter 11 a couple weeks ago, but that in faith we see three primary convictions that we have. One is that God is real, that God will keep his promises, and that seeking him is worth the effort. And this is what faith does, is we have faith that God is real, that God will keep his promises, and seeking him is worth the effort. And Abraham's going to tell us that today and show us that in his life of faith and his testing. We see in chapter 11, they show the test that Abraham went through. And we know this to be true, that we cannot grow unless we're tested. Don't we wish there's another way? Like, I wish I could grow without being tested, but it doesn't work that way, right? If you're in school, you get tested. And the only way you're going to pass that test is if you buckle down, you study, and you grow in your knowledge, right? And that's what they're showing us here, that how Abraham grew in his knowledge. And let's look at it right off the bat in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as inheritance. Okay, so let's give you a little context about Abraham right now. Abraham was living in the city of Ur. It was a prosperous city in the Mesopotamia area. It was kind of right along the Fertile Crest. And so things were booming. Life was good. Economy was great. The city was given over to idolatry. But, I mean, it was prosperous, and it was doing all these crazy things. And one day the Lord appeared to him. And now I know some of you guys say, well, technically, Pastor, it's not Abraham, it's Abram. I get that. Let's just, for simplicity's sake, we're calling him Abraham, okay? So don't come up to me, correct me afterwards. I understand, but we're calling him Abraham, okay? All right, so God appeared to Abraham, told him to leave Ur. Okay, think about this. This was his home. This is where his friends was. This is where his business was. He prospered there. And God's calling him to leave all that. And here's the crazy thing. God didn't even tell him where he's going. He just said, go. And in the King James Version, it says, get out. Go. And I'll tell you later. Come on, how many is going to obey that? Hey, I need you to go. Go where? Just start walking. Like, what? No, I'm not doing that. But this is what we're seeing here. He promised to bless Abraham, make his offspring as numerous as sands in the seashore, right? Here's the problem. At this point, Abraham's like 75 years old. His wife is 65. They have no children. Not a great start to a nation, is it? You're like, okay, I don't see where you're not going very far, right? Nobody's at 75 thinking, you know what? I'm thinking about starting a family. Nobody does that, right? We don't think that way. Most people don't think, you know, I'm 80. I think it's not time to start a new career. No, we don't think that way, right? And that's the very thing Abraham's being asked to do. But I want you to hear this. Whenever God wants to bless you, he calls you away from a place that is familiar and secure to an unknown place where you have to depend on him. Isn't that amazing? And it kind of stinks at the same time, doesn't it? Because like you built this life, you got security, you know how everything works. And God's like, I want you to go. And then we had 1,000 questions about where, when, how, what, you know. He's like, I just want you to go. And over here is this unknown place. And I know the second service is a younger generation, but we still don't like change. No matter how old you are, you don't like change. And so you're sitting here, security and comfort. You're looking over here like, yeah, but what if? You know, we told you a story when a few years back, my wife and I, our family, we were U.S. missionaries. U.S. missionaries, we loved what we did. We were called by God to do what we did. We were serving. We were having a blast. We'd been missionaries for going on 15 years at that time, and so we had everything. We were well established. We had churches calling us. We had services booked. We had trainings booked. I mean, we were doing it. And for us, that place was secure. I mean, we had everything. And then one day, God's like, hey, what about doing this? What about pastoring? And we're like, no, we're good. For about 6 months, we're like, we're good. Because we were secure here. We had money here. We knew where we're going here. We'd never done that. We'd never been lead pastors. That was unknown. You know, we were going to have to follow a guy who'd been here 20 years. You know what they call that? A buffer pastor, because he doesn't last. I didn't want to be a buffer pastor. And so there were so many unknowns. And really it came down to I was just comfortable here. And God said, I want you to go. Where to? Just start walking. You know what we do all the time? God says that to you. Okay, God. We take off walking. Like, technically I'm walking, God. Just walking in a circle right where I'm at. I'm not going anywhere, but that's why he sees in Abraham. He's like, go. Just go. Start walking. Look at the story, and we're going to read through it here, starting in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, look at this, not knowing where he was going. Are you kidding me? How many of us would do that? Where are you going? I don't know. I mean, you got to have somewhere. No, I don't know. Are you kidding? In verse 9, by faith he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land. Living in tents. Come on, how many checked out right there? Like, I ain't living in a tent. Living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs of him of the same promise. For he was looking forward. Here's one of the keys. We're going to hone in on this later. For he is looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And in verse 11, it shifts to Sarah's story a little bit. 11 and 12, it says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past age, since she conceded him faithfully who he had promised. Look at verse 12. Don't you love how the Bible doesn't pull no punches? Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven and as many as innumerable grains of sand of the seashore. And then verse 13 kind of summarizes all about Abraham and Sarah's faith. And look at this. This is another thing I think we would check out at this point. Verse 13 says, these all died in faith. Look at this next part. Not having received the things promised. Are you kidding me? You want me to go on a journey to somewhere I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know I'm going to make an income. You want me to do that? And oh, yeah. I don't even get to see the promise. Are you kidding me? You know, that's like a behavioral tool we use so many times with our kids, don't we? Like, hey, if you do this, this, I'll get you this. Okay, next time you try that and don't get them that. See how that works out for you, right? Hey, you do this, this, we'll go to a store. We'll get you some ice cream. They'll be like, hey, where's my ice cream? Yeah, you know what? I changed my mind. That's not going to work out well for you. I'm just telling you right now. But this is what happened. And he still did it. Look at how the rest of the verse goes. Not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. In other words, they never felt totally fulfilled here. Abraham never got to live in paradise on earth. But then we continue in verse 14 to 16. It says, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, so it's saying if they would have been thinking about Ur, they would have, you know, they could have returned if they wanted to. But verse 6, he says, but as it is, They desired a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. So God told Abraham to leave everything familiar, everything comfortable, and simply get out. So the question this morning is, why did Abraham say yes to that? I mean, you think of the story I just told you. How many of you would have said, yeah, I'll go? Like, no, thank you, is what we would be saying. So why did Abraham say yes? Verse 16 gives us an important clue. It said, but as it is, they desired a better country, that is a heavenly one. So Abraham saw something better being offered to him than he hadn't heard. Look at verse 10. In verse 10, it says, for he was looking forward to a city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. This gives you a clue of why he said yes. He saw something in his own city, in his own life, they knew was not permanent. He knew it was going to go away, it was going to dissolve, it was going to fade away. He's looking for a city with better foundations. So first he realized the cities of this world have no foundations. Well, what do I mean? I mean, your was a prosperous city, right? It was booming. It was like the New York of the time. But as impressive as it was, it had no lasting foundation. Tim Keller said that one of the things that brings a lot of people to seek the Lord is realizing that their city has no foundation. What do we mean? We mean you start realizing the impermanence of everything. Like it's not going to last. The cities of this world have no relational foundations. I mean, think of it in your own area. Think about how hard is it to keep friend groups together. Someone's always moving on, or maybe you really had a good group, but then somebody got mad, they left the group, or somebody died, they left the group, or how hard is it to keep family together? Think about that. The patriarch in the family, if they pass away, it seems like the family doesn't gather no more, do they? It just kind of fades away. Eventually, children leave, families scatter, people pass away. Think about our beauty and our talents. They even lack foundation, don't they? I mean, there's a $1 billion business trying to make you look 20 nowadays. And guess what? It doesn't work. Why? Because the foundations are not there. The foundations are not solid. Our talent, as good or talented as you are, that's going to fade. Right? I love disc golf. I go with the boys. I kill them right now. That's going to fade. One day, Zach is going to eventually beat me. But not yet. But our talents will fade away. And what they're saying is, so these foundations, we put a lot on relationships. Oh, it's all about that guy. It's all about this girl. Those are temporary. Those are going to fade. Your talent, your job. Oh, man, if I can just make this amount of money, I'm going to live in that house. I'll have the 2.5 kids. That's all shaky. Abraham saying, I realize something. I realize that's all going to fade away. But there's one thing that will not fade away. I'm going to that one thing. Even if I don't see that here on earth, I'm still going to that one thing. Because I know the maker of that thing. I know the designer of that. You know, a lot of philosophers, they come to understand that without God, there aren't really solid intellectual foundations. Think about it. About 100 years ago, Christianity was attacked by this enlightening thinkers group for being too pessimistic about human nature. Progressive thinkers at the time said that humanity is basically good, and thus reason that education and science were all we needed to achieve a perfect society. Okay, well then enters in World War I, World War II, Communism, Cold War, institutionalized racism. Hello. And then they were convinced of man's depravity. And the point is, general, in every generation attacks a previous generation because ideals didn't work. But the underlying theme is that Christianity stands with a solid foundation amidst this chaos, right? On a less philosophical, energy drink and espresso combiner right there, sorry. Philosophical, I can't, all right, we'll move on, you know where I'm going with it. On a personal level, what I'm trying to say, on a personal level, haven't you noticed that in your own life? You look about 10 years ago, look at the decisions and choices you made in your life. Is there anything you look back like, man, I was an idiot? No, I believe this 10 years ago, I was a knucklehead, right? And we think that way, that it always comes back to like, wow, I was not wise then, right? Every generation looks back at the previous generations and thinks, man, how could they have been so wrong? I told you many times, I grew up, I could not go to a bowling alley, go to movie theaters. We did not have dominoes in our house. We did not have playing cards in our house. And I look back at that now like, well, that was ridiculous. Because now I have all those things in my house. And we have fun playing dominoes. I'm not going to hell because I'm playing dominoes. Whoa. That happens all the time, isn't it? We look back at previous things and like, what were they thinking? Think back to some of the things your grandparents believed, and not mention your great-grandparents. Do you really feel like that 100 years from now people will look back and say, man, my grandparents, great-grandparents, they had it all together? No, they're probably going to be embarrassed by some of the things they believed. And the point is, our perception and our best wisdom is always in flux. And we need a city with better foundations. And that's the point of what we're talking about this morning, what Abraham's saying. Abraham realizes, he realized an important part of the journey of Christ is finding this city with the firm foundation. Because there'll be a time where physical, relational, intellectually, you'll realize these are unstable in your life. That happens so many times. People are looking for something because these things always fall apart. They're looking for something that is consistent, something that is solid, something that's not going to fall apart. And so Abraham, verse 10, he went looking for a city, has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And maybe that's you this weekend. I mean, what if that's what God's right now in his mercy is doing with you? Maybe you're here this weekend and you're wondering what God is doing in your life because everything is crumbling, your family's crumbling, your health is crumbling, all these relational foundations are crumbling. What if it was God trying to wake you up saying, you need a better city? You're building all this on this rocky and this unstable foundation. You need a better city. The story about a lumberjack. He got tasked to clear a section of the forest, right? He goes to the first tree. He knows a bird is building a nest there. Like, well, I don't want to, take the birds home. So he takes a mallet and starts banging the tree. Bird, of course, he flies the next tree. Well, of course, the next tree he's going to take down too. So he goes out, bangs the tree, and the bird flies the next one. He does this till the bird is finally out of the section of trees he's going to clear. At that time, that bird had to be a little ticked off. He's like, dive bombing him, letting the bird, he's probably, doing some things to the guy. He was probably mad, right? Why? Because the bird didn't know that these trees were going to get torn down. And in reality, the lumberjack was trying to be kind and show him, listen, it's not going to last. This is not going to last. Maybe that's what God's doing with some of us this morning. But before God can bring you to himself, he has to deliver you from you this morning. Abraham didn't see what he was doing as a sacrifice. He saw that he was upgrading. He's not giving up Ur. He's upgrading to a better city. He was giving something unstable up for something solid. So Abraham sought this city with foundations. Jesus talks about this in one of his parables. In Matthew 13:44, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. It says, then he goes with joy and sells all that he has to buy the field. I love this story because basically you get this ordinary dude walking in the field. He trips over a treasure, right? He trips over a treasure, stubs his toe, whatever it is, but you think, okay, that's kind of random. It wasn't for Bible times because remember, they don't have banks. And so imagine a neighboring town is going to war with you. What are you going to do with your money? You're going to hide it. So you take it, hide it in the field. What happens? You get killed in battle. You're never coming back for it, right? And so people found treasures back then. And so this guy, he's walking along. He stumps his toe. What he does next is a little shady. He covers it up, right? He's like, all right, I'm going to go buy the land. Not tell nobody. But this was kind of a common practice back then. So he covers it up. He goes to the landowner. He's like, hey, do you own this field? Yeah. What do you want to do with it? I want to buy it. What are you going to do? Well, maybe a sheep tent. I don't know. You know, fishing camp, whatever. So the guy gives him this crazy number. He doesn't want to sell the land. Gives him a crazy number. He goes, I'll buy it. And it says he goes, he sells everything he has. And you're like, well, that, you know, giving everything up. Everything he owns, he gives up. And you're like, well, that's kind of sad. No. It says he did it with joy. He says in verse 44, in his joy, he goes and sells everything he has to buy that field. Why? You think, well, he's giving everything he owns up. Yes, he's giving everything he owns up for something better. He realized that everything he's given up is going to fade away. He's getting something better in this situation. And this is what Abraham is kind of telling us this morning is he's walking away from all this for something better. Because what we gain is infinitely better than what we lose. Abraham saw a city whose foundation, whose designer and builder was God. Think about it. The decisions we feel so confident in today, a mere decade from now, will leave us scratching our heads. Like, why could I have been so naive? But amidst of all that, we have a more certain world. Something unchangeable. I want to show you this in Genesis chapter 15. I'm going to wind it down. Something amazing that God does in Genesis chapter 15 with Abraham. And so in 15, we see that God's going to make a covenant with Abraham. And it's kind of a weird, bizarre scene that you witness, but it's kind of a common thing. So in Genesis 19 or 15, verse 9, God said to Abraham, he said, bring me a heifer 3 years old, a female goat 3 years old, a ram 3 years old, and a turtle dove and a pigeon. And so here goes the covenant. All these animals, imagine taking these animals, the ram, the goat, the pigeon, all these, line them up, right? Then what you're going to do is you're going to literally cut them in half and then lay them over. Go to the next one, cut it in half, lay it over. Go to the next one, cut it in half, lay it over. So you have this walking space in between the halves. You know, gross as all get out, right? But it gets even better. So then what the purpose was, the blood would flow from the animals in the pathway, okay? And then if you're going to make a contract with somebody, you'd walk through that and your robe would, you know, catch the blood. And that was a symbol of you made a contract with another person and you were going to be held responsible, right? We live in a written age. So we get a guaranteed with a written contract, a lot less messier, right? The blood contract might be more effective, but we have a written one, right? And so this is what happened in their days. And again, it was not all that uncommon. And so God's setting this up. And the Hebrew word for covenant means literally to cut, the cut covenant, right? And so God and Abraham agreed to this covenant. Here's the amazing part about this. Look what happens next. And I have it in verse 12 through 17. As the sun's going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram. When the sun had gone down and it was dark, behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch. Okay, let me stop right now. That's describing God, right? Anybody in the Old Testament, they read that, they know that means God, okay? So the smoking fire pot, a flaming torch, that represents God, okay? So imagine now, sun goes down, it's dark. Now imagine God passed between these pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. So God went through the pieces, get the blood on the robe. He does all that. But who didn't pass through? Abraham didn't pass through. Abraham's over here snoring logs. God passes through. Listen, you understand what it's saying. That means God made the covenant by himself. That means God made himself responsible for both sides. Come on. That's exciting. You guys aren't excited, but that's exciting because what does that mean? That means if God reneges on the contract, guess who pays? God. That means if we renege on the contract, guess who pays? God. Come on, that's so good. You guys need to wake up and understand what God is saying this morning. I went through all this so you don't have to. That's what that story means. I mean, if God fails, he takes it. It's beautiful. Why? Because it's about Jesus. The Gospel of Luke tells us when Christ died and darkness descended on the whole earth, on that cross, Jesus' blood flowed out of his side like a river. Was God doing that because he hadn't kept up his end of the bargain? No. He was dying because we hadn't kept up our end of the bargain. He took my sins, my sorrows, made his own. I want to get the worship team to come back up. I need to stop. He suffered. He died alone. Where was I? Because I should have been one on the cross. I should have been the one dying. But yet he walked down the river of blood alone. You guys remember, you grew up in church. Remember the old hymn, "How Marvelous, How Wonderful, My Song Shall Ever Be." This heavenly city is a better place. This heavenly city offers satisfaction that we can't get here on earth. This heavenly city offers security, offers permanence. One day everything on this earth will pass away. Come on, don't you already see these things happening? Our bodies don't work like they used to. Our families are falling. Everything built is washing away. But God is taking us to a city with eternal foundations, with a relationship and joy that never ends. But to get to this place, we got to be like Abraham, willing to leave everything behind. It's not easy. It requires faith. Look at verse 8, Abraham. Look at what Abraham had to go through. Not knowing where he's going. God's going to ask you to do some things. He's not going to give you the whole map. In a foreign land, living in tents. He even died without actually possessing the promise. I mean, who would sign up for this? Only someone who knew what they were holding on to was just rocky. What they're holding on to is unstable. They knew it was not going to last. But yet, don't we build everything on this earth? We build everything on our job, on our relationships, on our families. We build everything. We construct everything. And we're like, this is it. You're fooling yourself. Well, I can do this. I can make earning. I can. Abraham had to be willing to step out into the unknown with his life as a blank check, trusting no one but God. There's a theologian to put it this way. He says, like Jesus is saying, just close your eyes and take my hand. I mean, I see so many people unwilling to do this. With considering following God, they want to know, well, God, if I surrender everything to you, you going to make me go somewhere? Or do I have to become a missionary? Do I got to change careers? Or do I got to break up with my boyfriend? Do I got to change a part of my life? I don't want to change yet. God, do I got to? Just close your eyes and take my hand. You know, I used to try to answer those questions for people. But then I realized it was just people wanting to know exactly where God was going. And then they would follow. You can't do that. Following God is not about a what, it's about a who. what should concern you is not what he asks you to do, but who is behind the ask. Close your eyes, take his hand. Are you willing to do that? Won't you stand with us this morning? Your Hebrews 11:6, without faith it's impossible to please God. For he that comes to him must believe that he exists and that he is a reward of those who diligently seek him. You gotta be convinced he's worth it. But so many of us live with this unspoken, silent assumption. And a lot of times we assume, I'm not sure God will even have me. I'm not sure he would receive me. I'm not sure I surrender enough, or I could never live that Christian life, or I've made too many wrong choices, and I know God would not accept me. You say that, but then we go to Hebrews 7:25. It says, consequently, he is able to save to the uttermost. What is uttermost? As far as you can see. Those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. I just tell you this morning, wherever you are, whatever you've done, God is telling you this morning, if you're willing to follow him, he'll be your God, he'll be your Savior. But this morning, I think there's just some things we've got to surrender. So where is God calling you to follow that you just need to surrender something in your life? I mean, what act of faith is he calling you to? Is he calling you to leave something? Is he calling you to go somewhere? Is he calling you to give something up? Because I really believe that there's a lot in here this morning. He's asking you to surrender something. Why? Because this is shaky stuff you're doing. These relationships you're putting all your efforts into, they're not going to last. In 10 years, you're like, what was I thinking? And so he's here this morning to say, leave that and turn to me. Put your faith in me. Put your faith in foundations who are not going to fall. What's something he's asked you to surrender this morning? What's something you've put so many hopes and dreams in that if it shatters, you don't know how you continue? Ask Abraham to go. God didn't tell him where. Start walking. Like, are you kidding me? Then all that Abraham did, all the promises that was promised to Abraham, he didn't even get to see them. Like, how does somebody do that? How about somebody say, God says walk, and you say, okay. God says, I'm going to promise you this, I'm going to promise you that, I'm going to promise you that. Okay, that's great, Lord. But you're not going to see him. What makes somebody do that? Faith. Faith to understand that what we have right now, it's just, you're like trying to balance. It's a balancing act in your life. You're trying to balance your job, your friends. You're trying to balance all this stuff in your life. You build it all up, and if one thing goes wrong, you're crushed. Abraham says, you know what? I know a city. I know a city that's eternal. No matter what happens in here, I know where I'm going. I know I'm going to a place that God designed. I know there's some good things here on earth. I know my family. I know, you know, I've built a great life, but I know it's all going to fade away at some point. today I'm going to surrender something in my life because I have faith to believe that he's prepared something greater for me. He's asking, will you surrender something? So you walked in here, you got a lot riding on this one relationship. Maybe God's asking you to surrender that. Maybe some of you have put some things in front of God in your life. And maybe he's asked you to surrender those things and establish him as the Lord of your life. Maybe he's asking you to give some things up this morning for things that are better. The reality is those things are not going to last, but God will last. Put your faith in him and that will last. How do you walk without knowing where you're going? You got faith. How do you sing in a prison bound in chains? You got faith. Faith to believe that whatever you're giving up, that he has something better in store for you. You can stay. You can stay in that place where you're at, but can I tell you, you'll never be happy, you'll never be satisfied. So you can give up that comfort, that security, go to the unknown. And the secret is, as long as you're in God's will, you'll be happy. You'll be satisfied. Heavenly Father, Lord God, I pray this morning, if there's anyone in here, Lord, it feels a tug on our heart to give something.